Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
This is Tasha Matthews on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio. We have a special guest with us. Professor and Pastor Kenneth Anderson is Associate Pastor at Grace Church San Diego. He currently directs the Gospel Choirs, UCSD Gospel Choir, Grossmont College Gospel Choir, and the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir in San Diego. He does music workshops twice a year throughout Denmark and Holland. He has performed throughout Denmark, Holland, Germany, Prague, Salzburg, Italy, specifically Venice, Florence and Rome, and the Vatican. He has performed in a myriad of theatrical roles in his lifetime. He has won Teacher of the Year at UCSD 4 times. He has a number 5 rating in 2015 on Rate My Professor and the number 3 rating in 2014 out of 1.8 million college professors from America, Canada, and the UK. Please welcome Kenneth Anderson. Hey, Kenneth, how are you today?
Good to be here, Tasha.
Awesome. So I have some questions for you. First off, how has music impacted your life?
Well, music has been a part of my life pretty much all of my life. Mm-hmm. Since the time I was 4 years old and I learned my first song, and I was 6 years old when I started playing in public at church and became the choir director of the children's choir when I was 14 and head of the music program when I was 17. And even though I thought it would be accounting or engineering or something else like that, things just worked around. I haven't actually applied for any position. I was called for these positions at elementary school to teach music to the children, and then UCSD offered me the job at for the gospel choir, and I was invited as a guest conductor for what was then an annual choir happening with the MLK choir, which is common around the nation to have a Martin Luther King choir where the funds go to benefit scholarships for high school students. Only this time, this choir wanted to become a regular choir. We organized and became a regular choir. I was also called from Grossmont College, right there. So music pretty much has taken over my life.
Wow.
And has been my life.
That's incredible. Yeah. To segue into that, what began your career in becoming a pastor?
As far as becoming a pastor, that's just a call I've always known. It wasn't something where I was going to school with the goal of becoming one. And I often said I was a pastor waiting to be posted, just like a soldier doesn't become a soldier because they put them into battle, but they've been prepared as a soldier and now they're ready to go to battle. And I just knew that that was in my heart, the skills that the Lord gave me with people and the love for the word, the love for him, and the love for his word, and the love for people. So I've always known it's always been a natural part of my life in some pastoral capacity, even without being over a church or behind a pulpit. It's always been that way with my friends in school and people I meet. And so that's another aspect of my life that has just sort of played itself into my existence. And wasn't planned.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Like, I grew up wanting to become a writer, and that was like a calling to me my whole life. So it makes sense. I totally understand that. That's cool. So what is an interesting fact about gospel choir at UC San Diego, or interesting facts?
Interesting facts about UCSD gospel choir. I would say some of the most interesting facts is the fact that I don't know when I first became the teacher of the class. It actually began, I believe her name was Tommy Smalls, a woman from Calvary Baptist. And I believe some of the young people at UCSD knew her, and they started the gospel choir as a club. And then Cecil Lytle took it over, Professor Cecil Lytle, and it became an actual class. Following him was Reverend Joseph Slade, and then behind him was Reverend Glenn Jones, And behind him was Dr. Rose Buchanan. And then 20 years between them. And then I came on, and I've been there ever since. This is my 27th year. When I first got the class, my goal was for it to grow to 200. But I had 370 by the end of the quarter. I mean, by the end of enrollment for that very first quarter. I said, well, and I never imagined. And every quarter, it grew by 200 or 300 until it maxed out 4 years later at 1,627. At that time, it was the second largest regularly performing choir in the world that we could find. There was one choir larger, a United Methodist Pentecostal Church in Brazil. And if UCSD had let me alone, I'd have had them in another couple of quarters. But the school decided that was too many students for one teacher, and so they limit the class to 800 now. But it's still the largest class in the history of colleges and universities.
Wow, that's awesome. What is it like to prepare for each quarter of gospel choir class at UC San Diego?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, especially since I have a lot of groups to direct. And part of the gifting, I'm able to hear a song and learn it. And I can change the key and I can arrange it on the spot. I think if I had to prepare, as is what's considered to be traditional preparation, then I'd be in trouble and probably be stressed. But sometimes there's a song I want to teach, and I'm listening to it on the way to rehearsal. Or I didn't have time to listen to it, so I'll play it for the choir. And while the choir is enjoying the song, they don't realize I'm learning the song. And then I teach it. So there's not a lot for me to do in the way of preparation other than finding the music, of course, and deciding on it. Many times what my choir is doing with the music at that time dictates how I'm going to arrange it to make it work for them.
That's cool to have that gift of being able to teach it like so profoundly and have that gift within you. It's awesome.
I'm very thankful for it, that's for sure.
Yeah. What's like the most memorable experience you've had teaching gospel choir in general?
Oh my gosh. And 27 years, there are an awful lot. One of my favorite stories is of a young man whose mother contacted me to say that he had been trying to come into my class for a year and couldn't get himself to go through the door. So I went to meet him after his math class and at UCSD, and we talked, and that third quarter I got a note in my box saying, thank you for trying, but it, you know, it's not going to happen. He has, I don't remember what the condition is, but if he's in a situation where there's attention focused on him, or even in his, he's a part of a group, but the attention is focused there, it shuts him down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so he couldn't get himself to come through the door. Now, the beginning of the next quarter, there he was in class. And now I'll skip to the end of the year, because that's the last time that I saw him and noticed him. In the third quarter of that year, my CA's class assistants came to me and says, Ken, you know, there's something we probably should have told you, but there's a student who's been in this class each quarter this year and has never performed in one of the performances. But what he does is two extra lectures, because I had four lectures a night in a lecture hall that sat 400 in order to see all of the students. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he would attend two extra nights in the week for each quarter, for each concert requirement. And they said, we've just been letting him do that, but we should have said something. I don't know why they didn't think all year, each quarter, he's enrolling. And they never thought, the end of this quarter, they decided to say something about it. It occurs to them to say something about it. And I said, well, who is it? And when they told me, I said, oh, and I had forgotten. I said, I know about his situation. I said, that's just fine. The end of this story is this. The last concert of that year was at my home church, Mount Olive Church of God in Christ in San Diego. And the students were coming there. And whenever back then we didn't have buses where we transport the kids in mass. They drove themselves. My choir can easily take up all of the parking for a couple of miles around. So I always have them park away from our venue and leave room because they can walk. And leave room at the venue for people who are coming to hear us. I get to the church at our call time an hour early. The parking lot's completely full. All the parking in the neighborhood is gone. And I'm like, did I not tell them not to park at the church, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm going in there to have them all go to their cars and move. I go in the church. The church is half full. But there's only one student from UCSD that's present at the time. And it was him.
Yeah.
The church was half full with his family. He had decided that he had been in this choir and rehearsed all year long and missed all these performances. He said he had to do one before he graduated.
Wow.
And because he was doing that, his parents came down from Big Bear, his family and neighbors came down from Big Bear, the people in his life, the medical people in his life. People flew in from other parts of the country.
Wow.
There were people in there from the cradle to on walkers. It was just like people were coming for a wedding. And his family flew in and drove in from everywhere, filled up half the church, took up all the parking, because this kid was going to perform. And so that's absolutely my favorite story. And with gospel choir, and there's so many more, as you can well imagine, over 27 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's an amazing, amazing story. I guess my next question would be, what facts would you like the listeners to know about the relevancy of gospel music and its roots?
Gospel music is rooted in the Negro spiritual. Negro spirituals and gospel music are often confused and spoken of as synonymous, but they're not. The Negro spirituals were songs that the slaves used in the South to communicate through code that their path, their opportunities for escape under the auspices of the Underground Railroad. Songs like Steal Away, Swing Low Sweet Chariot, This Little Light of Mine, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, and on and on and on. Not all of the songs were coded. Somehow or another, they did come to an understanding that the churches in the South were abusing the Bible in order to justify slavery. So they didn't reject God. Instead, they gravitated towards him and rejected their owners. But most of the songs that survived were actually code songs. They were, when they sang about leaders in the Bible, especially Moses, Jesus, Joshua, even God, code name for Harriet Tubman and other abolitionists like her. They were black Americans, white Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans who were working together in an organization called the Underground Railroad to help slaves. And there were some who were working directly with it, and there were some who were sympathetic to it, to where their homes had tunnels under their property and everything, and churches that were a part of the network. And so there was a whole network up under there. And leaders in the Bible, or anytime they refer to a band of angels coming after me, they're talking about people who are coming to help them get away. And when they sang about crossing over the Jordan River, code name for the Mississippi and the Ohio River, and when they sang about going to heaven or the promised land or Beulah land, pretty much any good destination, code name for freedom. Going home wasn't about being sent back to Africa. Africa sold her children away, not only to America, but to many other nations. So many of her children were born here and did not know Africa as home. What they were talking about when they said going home, they're talking about I'm going to freedom. Because after the biblical, in the Bible, the cross is the path from damnation to salvation. For them, the cross, metaphorically in the spirituals, is speaking about the path from slavery to freedom. And so the parallel between the biblical narrative and their stories were so close that their owners didn't figure out what they were doing. And there's a song that's commonly sung in church, "Let us break bread together on our knees." Perhaps you've heard it at communion time. "Let us break bread together on our knees." And the next line, you'll learn the time of day they're leaving and the direction they're heading. "When I fall on my knees with my face to the rising sun, oh Lord, have mercy on me." With my face to the rising sun. They're leaving in the morning, heading east. It's rather ingenious, you know. And on and on and on. The Negro spirituals are the root of rag, swing, jazz, blues, American country music, rock and roll, pop, soul, hip-hop, rap, and carrying on. All of these different styles. Not all of these styles have come directly from the spiritual. Some of them have come from another style, like heavy metal doesn't come directly from the Negro spiritual, but it comes from rock and roll, which comes from the Negro spiritual. So it's a grandchild, if you will.
Yeah.
You know. And the style that I deal with mostly with my choirs is gospel. That's also a style that comes from the Negro spiritual. And though there are fusions between other styles, some of them, especially around the genres of hip hop and pop and rap and house and some of these other styles. Gospel music is the only style that actually incorporates all the styles at some point or other. And gospel even includes something that did not come from the Negro spiritual. It even includes classical. Gospel kind of grabs everything. And gospel can just be gospel just by itself, or the next thing you know, it's all mixed up with everything else in there. Swing, jazz, blues, what have you. The Negro spirituals are the only slave songs in the history of the world to outlive the movement and become popular music, with the exception of the music of the Native Americans, whose culture and music our nation is still somewhat far behind on. With that exception, the Negro spirituals are the only music in America whose roots are actually in America. The music, people see everybody jamming and clapping and having a good time and everything, but just to know that that music comes from some really deep and dark places. It comes from, we call it Black history, and we should. And maybe more to the point, it's the history of Blacks in America, because this is American history. This happened in America. This is a part of the American story and a huge part of the making of America. And so from this time of really, of a dark wickedness, ashes, if you will, has sprung great, great traditions of music and culture and academia, as those who were stolen, some were stolen and some were bought from their homeland and brought here against their will, but they have become a part of the American story. And there's no discussion of the history of any of the styles of American music with any integrity that leaves out a discussion of the Negro spirituals.
Yeah. Wow, that's an incredible history lesson for our listeners.
A whirlwind tour.
It's good.
A whirlwind tour. You hear these songs, you know, people like they say, don't let Satan it out. I'm going to let it shine. You know,
yeah.
They're little cutesy versions for children, and I don't worry about that. But generally, we have relegated the Negro spirituals to kids and not really had much thought about them or respect for them because we had no idea.
Yeah.
Society as a whole has no idea of what was going on with these songs. So you got a song that says, oh, Mary, don't you weep. Martha, don't you moan. That's a New Testament reference. And in the middle of that, it says, Pharaoh's army drowned in the Red Sea. That's an Old Testament reference. So I'm sure that was confusing for the masters and just chalking it up to the ignorance of the slaves, mixing up stories in the Bible that had nothing to do with each other, but they didn't realize, well, I'm not trying, you know, to be doctrinally correct or give a Bible study here.
Yeah.
And actually communicating an opportunity for the people to get away. So I'm sure the taskmasters and the slave owners all bouncing their head, listening to the slaves at night around the fire singing, and in the morning wondering, where is everybody?
Yeah. it's like you said, it's super ingenious.
Yeah.
Like it's so clever.
It is amazing. For me, just as a pastor, it's amazing to me how humanity, we can be such awesome human beings, and at the same time, we possess the capacity for incredible cruelty and the ability to just numb ourselves to obvious truths and treat humans as though they were not humans. And even in the midst of all of that, somehow or another, God was able to put hope in these people. And though they couldn't see, taste, touch, hear, or smell him, you know, somehow or another, they caught hold to faith. And instead of wanting to die, and I'm sure some did commit suicide, but there are all these wonderful statements that come out of this terrible time of American history. Statements like, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on marching to Zion. Lord, help me to hold out till my change comes. I'm so glad trouble don't last always.
Yeah.
You know, just one more river to cross. If I can just hold out, I can get there. Just encouraging others. And when she was a child, she was sold away from her brothers and sisters. Families were broken up. Because family units is a very strong thing. They break them up. So she's saying, he's got my brothers and my sisters in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. And when her baby was born, her baby was taken from her and sold away to another plantation. That's why she's saying, he's got my little bitty baby in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. It was important for her to understand that God wasn't just a concept or a religious figure hanging on a wall in a church somewhere, but that he was real and that he was actually sovereign, and that however long it took, he knew what he was doing in allowing this to happen, and at some point he was going to put an end to it. In the meantime, I'm trusting him to take care of my family members somewhere else. And not just a psychological or emotional salve to deal with their situation, but it was important to them to know that it was real, because no salve is a true salve unless it's real.
Yeah.
Balm is a true balm unless it's actually real.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, this is what that was.
Yeah. That's incredible. So segueing into Black History Month, it's March, and we're airing the show on March, but just for our listeners to know, this is like paying homage to Black history, since Black history is American history. And so to segue into Black History Month, why is Black History Month so important, especially in correlation to music? And what does it mean to you?
I think it's very important because it's kind of twofold. First of all, a statement to our own children, as God had spoken to Moses to continually rehearse before the children of Israel, the younger children, as they came, the generations as they came on, how they came across the Red Sea, how this came to be, how that came to be. And so also we need, our children need to understand where they come from, and they need to understand that what they enjoy now and what's so easy for them to get, what many of them really take for granted, was provided for them on the backs of uneducated and impoverished people with strong wills and determination to see justice done in America, to see America live up to her lofty goal of justice and liberty for all, and to live up to a statement like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Well then, and so I think it's important. I think everything with a balance. But I don't think we should ignore the history for fear of developing in our young people a resentment.
Mm-hmm.
But everything with a balance. And too much on one side of anything is imbalance. We should remember where we've come from, how we got here, and to really realize just how great. Though for our ancestors, we don't have the stories like some of the other people in America with their ancestors, you know, royalty and riding horses and conquering other nations and things like that, you know, great stories. Well, what great story do I have? Oh, I have a tremendous story. You know, we know the names Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Thurgood Marshall and so many other wonderful names we know of these people. For every one of them we know, there are so many more hundreds for each one of them whose name we will never know.
Yeah.
But with the same heart and courage and strength of character of any conqueror in history helped hold America accountable for this great democracy and continuing to do so. I think it's also important for other people. I think it's important to know your own people, and you should know other people and appreciate them too.
Yeah.
And that's something we say, but we have a hard time sometimes fleshing that out. Yeah. And so I think it's important. Certainly the music, gospel music for some reason has an appeal across all boundaries, even those who don't believe in God, like gospel music. And, you know, every commercial, every movie or anything they want with liveliness, they do it gospel style. The words, you know, the words are about their car they're selling or something else, but they do it the gospel style. It's permeated the American culture, the American entertainment culture, music. The music life of America, not America only, because as I travel around the world, I hear coming out of their clubs the music of the African Americans America. And that, and they sing our music, and even rapping. You haven't heard rapping till you've heard Polish rap. And rap in their tongue, you know, or Danish rap. And rap in their tongue. But they'll always come back and say to you, but now we want to turn around and do one that's in English because it's real. that way because it flows, because that's the language it comes from. Gospel music is huge around the world, Japan and Norway and throughout all of Europe before I've been. It's just huge, and people are attracted to gospel and jazz. We have a jazz festival here once a year, a jazz week here, where we, the Gaslamp District and certain places like that. When they have jazz over in Denmark, it's the whole place. You want to be a part of the jazz scene, just step mm-hmm. out your door. They have huge banners in their libraries talking about the people who are coming over from America. And so the music and the history of it and just how it speaks to the endurance of the human spirit, but not just the greatness of the human spirit, but to understand the greatness of the one who made us
yeah.
and put this spirit in us.
It's good stuff. Thanks for sharing with us. And then in relationship to UC San Diego in the events in the past, what was your reaction to various racial incidents on campus at UC San Diego?
I had the same reaction to that I had not too many years ago when I went outside one night to see what all the noise was about, and there were a bunch of young ladies with their shirts off. I mm-hmm. thought this was the wrong way to protest, but they were protesting about taking back the night and injustices and things that happened on the campus, you know, and not UCSD only, but we're speaking about UCSD since that's what we're involved with. But it hurts my heart when people are made to feel less than they are, or when people are overlooked. And sometimes we don't mean to overlook, but just the fact that we're not thinking about them. We live in a day and time where, you know, we want to try to paint a rosy picture about it, but we live in a day and time where racism is still an issue.
Yeah.
It's still a problem. There are so many people who say it's not, and they said, look, we have a black president. You know, I'm just like, you know, come on, join the real world. If you think that, then you're living in a bubble, and it is. And so there are people off campus who just kind of joined in to make this worse. And I was glad that the school made moves to come around this. There's just like, you know, as far as a real response to what the school should do, I don't know enough about all of the situation to speak intelligently to that. It's just that I would think that to university campuses all over this nation, to places where there are different races all over this nation, we just need to take intelligent and sober actions to protect our people and to make sure that all of our people are treated with dignity and all of our people are treated with the same opportunities. And when we see there's a threat to that, then to swiftly move upon it and not to let it fester. I would also like to say to those who are feeling that oppression, don't sit on it and let it simmer until it boils. But speak up. Speak up. Sometimes you think by speaking up, you know, is one incident. Nobody's going to pay attention to that. But you should speak up. You should speak up and not let a thing just get out of control. Yeah. I don't know what that beast is of racism. It didn't just start in America. It's been going on for centuries. There's always some nation trying to take over another nation and enslave them. And sometimes they seem to take turns. And Egypt enslaved. And now somebody's trying to enslave Egypt. And I was really hurt. I got to speak with some of the students because they were in my class. And to hear how they were speaking about how they were afraid. And it's like, who did you share that with? And then if someone did share that, what did they do when they heard a student share that they were afraid? Yeah. I know there are no, you know, there's no easy, if I could have easy answers to these things,
yeah.
I'd write the book and get rich.
Yeah.
Because we would solve this. But we just need, we need to be intentional as we are in our relationships with our spouses or with their significant others. We need to be intentional when we have people under our care. We need to be intentional, not just waiting for something to come up, but anticipating and looking, you know, to see that, is this in place? And then when something comes up, then to address it quickly. I use this word carefully, but if you're the victim, sometimes it's hard to speak up. Yeah. Sometimes you're afraid to speak up. Not everybody's comfortable with voicing what's going on to them, but somehow to provide then a safe place of encouragement where they know they can always go without fear of some reciprocity or whatever it is that's holding them back. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to stop saying it.
Yeah. It's good. Are there any upcoming events the listeners should know about that you would like to mention?
May. We have a really big concert coming up in May. May 24th is a Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock p.m. Mandeville Auditorium at UCSD. As far as my community choir, Martin Luther King Community Choir San Diego, just go to our website, MLKCCSD, the initials of the choir, Martin Luther King Community Choir San Diego, MLKCCSD.org, and you can see that concert list. They're all over the place. And we have a huge thing it's an annual event we do every year. It's called All About the Blues, and it sells out shortly after we set the date. Both shows are sold out, so I can't even advertise that to you because you won't even be able to get in. And that happens every year, so you might be thinking about that for next year. We've never advertised it because we've never had to. So let you know that's coming up. And, yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That's awesome. And do you have any last-minute thoughts that you want to mention?
Let's see. The one thing about gospel music, that's probably a little different from most other genres, is you can sing this music without any expertise, without a voice that would normally be turned away in an audition situation with a different choir. You can come to a gospel choir and sing. And for some reason, the music facilitates, whether there's one person, four persons, 40, 400, 4,000, the music works. Everybody can't get up there with R&B. Everybody can't get up there with rock and roll. You want to perform. If you get in a gospel choir, you'll be able to perform regardless of the level of your ability. And here's another thing. It's not a reason to keep doing this, but with this genre, you can make a mistake. You know you didn't intend to do that. The audience knows you didn't intend to do that, and they enjoy it anyway. It was a great time, and they come back. Don't try that with opera.
Yeah.
The critics will eat you alive, and no one will go to your shows anymore. And so this genre, because it's folk music, it just lends itself to help so many different groups of people not only learn about the culture and learn about the music and the contribution of the people behind the music, but also to develop musically themselves. You got some voice training going and clapping on two and four and rocking and smiling and enjoying it all together. And so we just have a great time. Yes.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Kenneth Anderson, for being here and sharing with us about music and culture and the diaspora of African-American history. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure and a privilege to be here to get to do this.
All right. So thank you, listeners. Once again, this is Tasha Matthews on KNSJ Radio at East County Magazine Radio Show. Thank you for listening.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.